it's almost advantage not to have the enormous economic, political, and social responsibilities of looking after millions and millions of olive trees. We can enjoy the deep cultural roots which Americans seek because they often don't have. The richness of the stories that each of the people who produce the oils out in the other room would be stories that Americans would be deeply interested in. And Americans are fond of trends. We've seen with wine, obviously, but also sea salt, gourmet coffee, cheese, and so on. This is something that once something gets going and gets on in the public eye, particularly in food, it's something that can really take off. I think it's a very exciting moment for olive oil in America right now. I mean, America has become the number three consumer in the world, despite the fact that we actually per capita consume a very small amount compared to the Mediterranean countries. There are new sources of information that are coming out. The Olive Oil Times, if you haven't seen it, read it. It's very good. Cooking shows, as Greg Richard said, are usually popular. Food writers like Nancy Harmon Jenkins and others are getting it, and they're explaining it in ways that people can understand. An enormous interest in health. This is an American passion, even though it's the average American diet is not necessarily reflected, but an awareness of health. Resveratrol, I think is the term that the substance in red wine that caused an enormous boost in interest in red wine some years ago is an example of how the health message can be a determining factor. And the IOC, of course, is going to be starting a promotional campaign in America. You know, the stars seem aligned to really make a boost in an American appreciation of oil and use of oil, consumption of great oil, not average oil. The biggest challenge is, I think, to really powerfully and permanently communicating what great oil is have to do with beyond conferences like this, which are magnificent, beyond books that may be written, beyond television shows and so on, are actually getting the oil into people's mouths. This is the ultimate challenge, I think. And one that we have talked about some complexity in how consumers perceive oil, and I agree there are some things that need to be explained, but basically the basic message of the difference between something that is fresh, green, aromatic, alive, and something that could be seed oil or butter or even bad olive oil is flat, stale, perhaps rancid and dead. That's a very easy thing to understand. That's not complex. And so I think the question of how you bring people together with olive oil, one of the obvious things we've seen the last 3 days, great restaurants. Greg Richard talked about it. And I think everyone who's been in this room and watched the great chefs perform know that people like Maria José San Román, Paul Mafalota, Cristóforos Pescas, and Dani García, among others, are ideal educators. They're entertainers. They're extremely knowledgeable. They have a direct connection, a face-to-face connection with a wide audience, and also on television and so on. Other venues in America that are coming up that I think are important to think about. There's a growing series of franchise stores in America. The question of the quality of their oil and the knowledge of their staff needs to be addressed. But they're extremely potential venues for actually getting the oil into people's mouths. There are also oil bars spreading across the nation, from prestigious locations like the Culinary Institute to much more humble but nonetheless widespread venues like supermarkets, oil bars, and in these venues, people will come encounter for the first time and start to ask the right questions about what great oil really is, and begin to make that comparison between what they had in the past, which perhaps hasn't been great, and what they're getting now, which is an awakening. Now, how best to use these venues is the next question, and I don't have answers again, but a few principles that might be worth considering. First of all, choosing oils that do not overwhelm or put off the good American consumer who's used to sweets, butter, milder oils. So perhaps a gentler Ardequina or a Tajasca rather than a radioactive Koroneiki or Koratina, which might actually shock rather than communicate. I think tasting oil straight is a very important thing to be able to offer little cups, but I think also with a simple food, obviously a little piece of bread is a familiar thing, something that doesn't distort the oil taste too much. But also we've talked about potato. That's a very familiar steak and potatoes is a paradigmatic American comfort food. Perhaps a warm potato with olive oil is a way of getting that message across and starting to enter into the comfort food zone. And getting good educators who are communicating and leading people by the hand, obviously in the restaurant is perfect. In these other venues, it's a very important thing to be able to find. Creating comparisons, a mild and full body, making sure that there's a range of oils that allow people to see the differences between the full body, the milder, the oils from different places, so they start again to ask the questions and realize the richness of the range. And above all, to create an atmosphere of play and experimentation rather than simply a lesson. And that's again what the chefs have done so well, I think, in the last 3 days, and what should continue also in these other venues, is a sense that you're not getting lectured. These are the different cultivars, and this is how you must use them, but actually allowing you to play and experiment with this, a bit of chemistry, a bit of health, a bit of food. And I think that's something that Paul Pelota said earlier. Ultimately, if you can leave the consumer, the taster, I hate the word consumer, the taster, with a generally great feeling of having taken part in something that has made their life materially richer, you're going to have an olive oil, a discerning olive oil consumer for life. So that's
incentives. Bravo.